You're listening to the Master Passive Income Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Breakthrough Investor Show. My name is Charles Roche Jr., and we focus on breaking through limitations and barriers to get you to that next level of investing. With me is William Palmer, my amazing co-host. And in today's episode, our guest will be talking about how he went from a 9-to-5 IT job to becoming a business owner and investor.
That's right, Charles. And how he retired at the age of 36, investing in stocks and some of the awesome things he does now. Let's get started.
Welcome to the Breakthrough Investor Show, where we guide you to financial freedom and break barriers in your investing to give you the secrets to success. And now, here are your hosts, Charles Roche Jr. and William Palmer.
Hi, everyone. It's Charles Roche Jr. with Breakthrough Investor, where we help you break through that next level as an investor. And with me today is William Palmer, real estate investor, coach, and the amazing co-host of Breakthrough Investor. William, what's up today, buddy?
Oh, it's a great day to be alive, Charles. How are you doing?
Man, I am doing well. I'm in sunny weather like Michael, you know. Don't be jealous, you know.
A little bit jealous, can't lie. It's about the high, I think, is 40 today. So
there you go. Well, man, William, I'm just super excited about today's guest. He's a good friend of mine. Got to spend some personal time with him, even in his home city. And, you know, we both met him at the Real Estate Wealth Builders Conference.
Yeah, we did. Definitely looking forward to hearing a little bit more about his story. I don't think I've gotten quite as much time to talk to him as you have, but I love hearing how people became successful in real estate and kind of what the event was, whether it was multiple events or whatever it was that just kind of pushed them to that edge where they had a breakthrough. That's Breakthrough Investor. That's what we're going for, right? So really looking forward to this. I think he kind of quit his job and quote unquote retired at 36, but really, really interested in hearing his story.
Yeah, he did. He did quit his career, this 9-to-5 career at 36 years old by leveraging entrepreneurship, equities, and real estate. Like he's just into a variety of stuff. You know, those people that you go to and you want to like learn everything, like he's the perfect guy.
Yeah.
You don't know it. If he don't know it, I bet you either he will find out or he'll learn it himself.
Yeah. He's probably one of those guys that's like, well, I don't know about that, but I know a guy. He's probably one of those guys.
He is. I'm telling you. He may not be the guy, but he know a guy that knows a guy. That knows another guy, right? So, but you know, the other cool thing, he's a guest speaker, he's an author, he's so many different things. And he's also the founder of the Financially Alert and the co-founder of the Wealth Builders Mastermind with Dustin Heiner. So
yeah,
he's into a lot of stuff, man. And also too, if you haven't read his book, you definitely have to check it out. He's the author of a best-selling book, The Fire Planner, which is a step-by-step workbook to reach your full financial potential. And it's being featured in outlets such as Good Morning America, Business Insider, Market Watch, Yahoo Finance, and MSN, just to name a few. Really good book. I did it myself. I went through it and literally went through the whole process. And it definitely put me in a better spot financially to just go through those things that maybe I wouldn't have thought about. So huge, huge, huge encouragement to read that book. Man, it's so many more things about him, literally, William. It's like a long list. Literally, I can't even fit everything, but I just want to share some more. This guy, he just loves people and loves to help people. And so he started his own podcast, Breakthrough Millionaire, which shows you how to build wealth inside out. You know, we didn't steal our name from him. You know, just so happened to happen that, you know, we're Breakthrough Investor. But his podcast is phenomenal. I love listening to it and listening to the stories and the guests that he bring on. And the cool thing, you know, like I told you, he likes doing a lot of things. But, you know, he is a family man at heart and loves to spend quality time with his wife and his two children. He loves fishing, traveling, tennis, learning new technologies. And, oh, did I mention to you, William, that he's a foodie?
No, we did not. You did not.
Yes, I'm going to put him on the spot. He actually has a food blog. Years ago, it was so cool. And actually, I got to actually taste some of that delicious food from the food blog. I believe he blogged one of the things that we bought too when I was in San Diego. So super excited for today's guest. So let's welcome today's guest, Michael Kwan. Michael, what's up, buddy?
Welcome, Michael.
Hey, guys. How's it going? Thanks so much for having me. Super excited that you guys are starting Breakthrough Investor. And when you guys top the charts, we're going to get a lot of that trickle effect from Breakthrough Millionaire, right? From people searching Breakthrough Investors. So keep at it.
Oh, man. Hey, we'll share it, right? We'll, you know, by us working all together. But Michael, man, I love hearing your story. And every time I hear it, I feel like I hear something new and I grasp like one, you know, at least one more thing to help me, you know, better my life. And I think our listeners will benefit from your story too. So tell us more about your investing journey, Michael, and what initially made you want to do it.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think today, Charles, what I'll do is I'll give you guys some of my story from the lens of breaking through, specifically as an investor. And I think we can really take this back all the way to when I was a kid. When I was growing up, you know, my parents were middle class, so to speak, or whatnot. You know, they both were working. My mom stayed home with us during periods of her life when we were really young. But my dad, he was a CPA, so he did accounting for other companies and whatnot. And I had a pretty big, large extended family on both my mom's side and my dad's side. And what I noticed was that there was a couple of uncles on my mom's side that never had to work. And I was just like, well, that's bizarre. How come like my parents are going to work? How come they're so busy? And then they're over here just like traveling, doing all these different things. And I was like, I want some of that when I'm older, right? And I didn't quite know how to even conceptualize what was going on, other than I knew that they were constantly around. And I was really great friends with my cousins. And my uncle basically was always home, like doing stuff. And he was a dentist before. But what I didn't realize was that he had accumulated a pretty large portfolio of real estate. And so he was able to retire early, I think around 39 or something. And I just knew that he had a quality of life that was very attractive to me, even at a very young age. And so as I was growing up, the cool thing was that I got a lot of the financial, just I think, understanding from my dad as a CPA. He would have me come into his office and just learn the basic numbers, right? But I didn't really learn the ideas of building wealth and investing until I started to peek a little bit further into kind of what my uncles were doing. And so that really led me on the journey of trying to figure out how to become rich, right? When I was a kid, I was like, I want to be rich. I want to have all these cool cars and have all these Lamborghinis and all that good stuff. Or so what I thought at the time, right? But really, really boiled down to was when I finally got to college and I started to unravel things, I started to get really curious. And so I talked to my uncles. They pointed me some great books. I read things like Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and started to really shift my idea of what it meant to be wealthy, right? And it really became an understanding that wealth comes, I think, in time, right? Being able to do what you want, when you want, with who you want, whenever you want. And so when I really latched onto that idea, I went deep and I started reading everything I could. I started attending seminars. I started to listen to different people and their approach to life. And what was fascinating was that my definition of wealth started to shift and it started to change. And as I started to, you know, exit from university, I had a very key question I was asking myself, you know, what do I do? What do I do next? I don't know. Right. I didn't necessarily know anything that was necessarily valuable to the marketplace, but I knew that I wanted to build a business, except I didn't know anything to help anyone. So what I did, though, was when I exited university, I had studied economics. And the only reason I studied economics was because that was the fewest number of credits I needed in order to exit university. As you can see, I was already lazy, right? I was like, all right, how can I get here as efficiently as possible, right? So I exited and I was like, you know what? An economics degree, it's kind of related to business, but not exactly. It looks like there's a bunch of sales jobs. And like, I'm like, I don't know if I'm cut out for that. So I noticed that at the time, technology was actually a really great industry. We were during the dot-com boom. And so that was just right at the advent of the internet. And so companies like Pets.com, Amazon, all these companies were kind of upcoming. And there's a lot of fervor. There was a lot of money getting pushed into companies that were worth multi-billion dollars in capitalization, except they never even sold anything. So it was a really bizarre time. It was just all this hype. But the cool thing is I caught the tail end of that and I started working for a tech company because I was a gamer in university, in college. I knew how to take apart a computer, put it back together, build out some networks. And that got my foot in the door to a tech company. And so what happened from that is I worked there for a year and a half and I really started learning how to do, you know, just work for IT infrastructure, back end, building out servers, building out networks. And also in the process, I got to see the inside outs of a business and how it worked, you know, the marketing, the sales, the operations, the, you know, all the different pieces, which was really fascinating to me. So I was taking notes all along the way, and all along the way also studying and learning, just being a sponge, right? And I think for you listeners that are really interested in breaking through and becoming a great investor, I think a lot of that just comes from being a sponge, being able to absorb so much information from around you, and then also keeping in mind what your goal is. And so what happened was, unfortunately, we had the event of 9/11, right? And when that happened, the company that I was working for essentially imploded, meaning that they started laying people off left and right because they lost all their contracts. The economy just took a big dump, and it was just a really bad time in the economy. So we were actually, my friends and I, we were working in the infrastructure side of the business. And that was the only profitable segment of our company out of maybe like six different, like, you know, different pieces of, I guess, value add to companies. We were the only profitable one. So what happened was that we were like, you know what? Do we want to wait around for the seventh round of layoffs? And I was like, I don't. So I got my friend. I was like, hey, let's start our own company now. What do we have to lose, right? I was in my 20s. They were in their 20s. And so we did exactly that. We basically left in a depression, right? It wasn't a depression yet, but we were going into a, you know, a pretty big recession. And we basically left and we started our own company. And guys, we didn't know what the heck we were doing. We literally like working from home. We were just going to, you know, our first couple clients that we had, crawling under desks, plugging in Ethernet cables, like rebooting computers. And, you know, we just started out figuring it out. And another piece of, you know, just what to share with you guys is that part of, I think, becoming a breakthrough investor is just going out and doing stuff. And so we started doing stuff, right? We started fixing things. We started looking for clients. We started asking people, you know, who else needed help with their computers. And we slowly built this company over time. And, you know, I feel very blessed that over a course of 10 years, we were able to build it, you know, to a small multi-million dollar company, starting out just from a couple of guys. And in that process, what was really fascinating was that you learn so much about yourself and what you're capable of doing and what you realize that you thought you once couldn't do that you can actually do. And so that was really, I think, a nice, I think, launching piece into my career of being able to really understand that, hey, I've got control over my life. I've got control over building out my own wealth, so to speak. And it's not like I was making like tens of millions of dollars like every single year, right? I was making, in some senses, there was years, many years actually, in fact, where I had just essentially created myself a job, right? If you look at the cash flow quadrant and Rich Dad, Poor Dad, you can see that there's the employee, the self-employed, the investor, and the entrepreneur, right? And for the longest time, we were on the self-employed side of things. And what I do want to tell you is that even though you are in the employee spot or you're in the self-employed spot, you can still become a great investor while you're in that spot. You can actually traverse multiple quadrants at once. And so I was doing the things that most people weren't doing. I was funding my Roth IRA first and foremost. I was maxing that out. And then I was doing my 401k, or we had this, it was called a SEP IRA at the time, which is essentially like a 401k. And I was maxing these things out along the way, really not paying attention to, you know, using that extra money that I had to buy fun things. And side note, I did buy some fun things, right? But I had a limit, right? So I would automatically put away stuff and invest it into equities along the way. And then I would have a little portion that I would play with, because I think it's important to also play. I think a lot of times people, especially in the FIRE space, which is the financial independence retire space, a lot of people talk about saving, saving, saving to the point where you can't even live. I think you can have it all.
You're stuck on the beans and rice pretty much.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think you can have it all. You gotta be very intentional. And once you put away, you know, your seed capital, let's just so to speak, I think you actually should save some of that to actually invest in yourself, invest into things that make you happy. And so forever, it could be like fishing, it could be like tennis. And then for me, it was actually going to wealth building seminars. I remember I went to this Learning Annex wealth building seminar. So there was people like Tony Robbins, Donald Trump came in, and I think they paid him like $1 million to like speak for like 30 minutes. This is well before his political career. But it was really funny because it was during the time when he had this show called The Apprentice. And so he used to walk around and be, you're fired, you're fired. And it was very entertaining. But all these different guys that would go there. And again, just immersing yourself along your career, wherever you're at, wherever you find yourself in your career, immersing yourself into content like Breakthrough Investor, Breakthrough Millionaire. We talk about mindset as well. And there's just all these resources, right? But you have to be very cognizant of what that looks like. And so let me fast forward really quick. At the end of 10 years, we ended up selling the business. And then I took a lot of that equity that I was able to pull out of the company and I put it in cash flowing real estate. right? So that gave me the ability then to have complete flexibility to exit from that 9-to-5 traditional career path. And then from that point forward, I've been focusing on family. I've been focusing on building Financially Alert, which is a resource to help people to build financial independence and financial freedom. And in that process, I get to come across just amazing people like you guys, right? And, you know, I count my blessings every day, because just to be inspired by the things that you guys are doing, to see what, you know, everyone invests a little bit differently, right? So you got to find what works for you. If for me, I like to invest across the board, many different things, but there's some people that are very good in individual things. And in some ways, I think that's even better sometimes, but you got to find what's right for you. And then when you find it, I think you keep going forward. So, you know, that's a little bit about my story quickly, but, you know, I know you guys want to talk a little bit more about some of the breakthroughs, and definitely there's some stories around that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. We definitely want to hear it all. And Michael does count his blessings. So I remember Michael and his wife, they do gratitude walks. I thought that was so cool. You know, so my wife and I, we started implementing it, but it's being more tough in the Dominican Republic, but we're going to get back to it, because that's an important part of the journey as well, is being thankful and counting your blessings. But yes, we definitely want to jump into some of those breakthroughs, because, you know, you started, you know, an employee, then you went to being self-employed. And as you were employed and self-employed, you were investing, you know, whether it be stocks or real estate. Now, let's go to the point, you know, where you decided that, okay, I'm going to jump to the other side of the quadrant, right? The business and the investor side. Correct me if I'm wrong, business and investor. When did you decide to go to that? Like, how was that journey breaking through to put, you know, the self-employed part of the quadrant aside?
That's a great question, Charles. The funny thing is, I will tell you guys that I made the decision long before I ever got there, right? There is a lag effect. And I want to be very clear that a lot of times when we make a decision, the result that we expect up front sometimes doesn't come till many years later, even though we'd like it to come like the next year or the next 2 years. You know, for me, it took, you know, we're talking a decade, maybe even more, and it's still ongoing, right? And what I like to say is that, you know, God's delays are not God's denials, but you got to put yourself in a situation where you're willing to persist and have that grit to make sure that you get that outcome, right? And if you keep on taking action, if you keep on iterating and keeping that goal in mind, then you're eventually going to get there. But I will tell you, Charles and William, that it was frustrating at the time, because, like, you know, as I'm in my 20s, I'm like, oh, I'm going to build this like huge giant company, and it's going to be like, you know, this, you know, giant conglomerate or whatever, right? And
the next Microsoft.
Yeah, exactly, right? And while you know, it didn't exactly turn out like that, what I learned along the way was invaluable. And my idea of wealth actually shifted as well. Remember I told you when I was a kid, right? I thought that being rich meant having all these cars and all these houses. And going back to my uncles, right? The reason why I say I had two uncles that were rich, and they were, one of them legitimately became essentially a billionaire by the time he passed away. And the other one basically became like, you know, a decamillionaire, maybe even nine figures, whatever it may be, right? They had very different lives. They had very different lives. And the one that was building businesses, that was just, you know, off flying around the world, doing all these really cool business things, you know, that's what initially attracted me. I'm like, oh, I want that, right? And then my other uncle that was just at home with his kids and being really present and, you know, had those little side hustles and whatever else, like, you know, I got to see both of them. But as I started to grow up and I started to have my own family, we start to, I think, figure out what we value. And when I realized that, you know what, do I really want to go out and have this huge giant company? The question was no, because more importantly, I realized that what was important to me and what I valued was the relationships. What I valued was the experiences. And so I'm like, well, with anything in life, there's opportunity costs, right? And we have to make decisions on sometimes, you know, where things go. Sometimes you don't. Sometimes you can have it all. But I'm going to tell you, there's choices you have to make. And sometimes, yes, there are decisions one way or the other, opportunity costs. And so you have to make a decision on what's important to you. And so the good thing is I had these two models, and I'm like, all right, well, I think that's enough money for me. So long as I can do anything I want, when I want, wherever I want, with who I want, that's what I figured out for myself. And so again, I shared this with you because as you're becoming this investor, this breakthrough investor, you want to be very clear on what it is that you want, because if you don't figure that out, or if you don't evolve that idea over time, you might be chasing something that you actually don't necessarily value. and it can cost you some time and focus.
That's pretty good, man. Man, thank you for sharing that.
Michael, you've had quite the journey, obviously, but what's some of the kind of harder things that you've had to get through and go over? What's been some of those challenges that you've been presented, which obviously, given the amount of time that you've been doing this, I'm sure there's been quite a few, but what's some of those challenges or maybe some of those mental blocks that you had to get over to be successful?
Yeah. Oh man. If I listed all of that, we'd be here for 3 hours, but I know we've only got 45 minutes. Let's go with a couple ones that stick out. You're right though, William, you know, over my career, there's been many, right? And so part of that is as investors, as humans, right? Just learning how to navigate life and being able to interpret what's happening to us in terms of results is very important. So being that we're all real estate investors here, let me tell you about my first real estate investment. So I started my real estate investing career, let's say in 2004 was when I really started getting interested in real estate investing. You know, I had my company at the time and I was really looking at a way to transition, right? The whole cash flow quadrant, right? I was building my business. And sure, it was an asset here, but I was also kind of self-employed, but I wanted some of that passive income. So I'm like, all right, real estate, I know that both of my uncles had, you know, pretty good chunks of real estate. So I'm like, I know this is a place that I want to learn. So of course, I started diving deep. I started to read all the books. I started to understand how to, you know, figure out what a good deal was. By the way, side note, it took me like years to figure out how to even know what a good deal is. I remember that was like the longest standing question in my mind was like, how do I know if this is a good deal or not? And someone finally said, and I remember at this seminar, he's like, if you don't know if it's a good deal, then it's probably not a good deal. I was like, I mean, I'm like, well, if I gave you this property and it's like 50% off what the, you know, going rate is, would you consider that a good deal? I'm like, yeah, it's a good deal. Well, you know, and then from there, I was able to dissect it backwards. I digress though. So I started studying. I figured out finally, okay, here's how to figure out the cash flow. Here's how much I have to put down. Here's how I can finance it, all that good stuff. And I flew around all the country in the United States. I went to Florida, Texas, Oklahoma, Arizona, Las Vegas. And I looked around California too, which is where I live. I live in San Diego. Definitely not California. Definitely that was not going to happen. So yeah. I started looking at these other Sunbelt states. And I ultimately ended up settling in Las Vegas because it's pretty close to where I'm at. I actually go there, you know, for vacation occasionally. So I'm like, well, it's kind of multi-use. It's, you know, pretty close by. And at the time, you know, it looked like the numbers were decent for cash flow. So I started digging and I concentrated on this one neighborhood and I got super excited because I finally found some cash flowing deals. And this was after a period of, you know, a lot of fervor. We're talking about 2006 to 2008, the market was going up exponentially and the numbers actually didn't make sense. And this is when I'm learning all this stuff. So everyone and their mother was telling me, oh, you got to buy this real estate. You got to buy this real estate. And I'm like, yeah, but all these, you know, real estate investor books, they seem pretty legit and none of this is penciling out. And they're like, no, it's just going to go up automatically. I'm like, but it says don't just buy in speculation. Anyways, I stuck to my guns, but I'll tell you guys really quickly, I almost got pulled in just to the hype, even knowing the numbers. So side note, trust the numbers, right? So I finally trusted the numbers. I finally found something that was going to cash flow about $350 a month. I was like, sweet. And so I made an offer, super excited. I'm like, this is going to be great. I actually flew out there just to kind of look at it and, you know, look at the neighborhood. And I was like, oh, this is perfect. Went out there, made my offer, gone. I missed it. So I was like, what? This is true, right? I like spent all this analysis to figure out this is the perfect property.
And I flew in. Oh my gosh.
That was too fast. I was like, you know, not even ready. And it's okay, right? So you take the next step, right? You go out and you make an offer again. And I found another one in the same neighborhood. Same thing happens. I get, you know, sidelined. This goes on for the period of like probably 8 months or so. And I'm on my essentially 12th offer at this point. And I'm like, okay, whatever. I'm not going to go out there and look at these things anymore. I basically know the area. I know what the numbers are. I'm just going to make the offer. And I finally felt comfortable making the offer, realizing that I wasn't, you know, actually legally bound to buy it if, you know, I found stuff later. I didn't know that the first time around, but I finally made that offer and I got accepted and I was like super happy, I was super overjoyed. And then what happened was I was like, oh, this is great. This is going to, you know, work out perfectly. I felt, you know, I was patting myself on the back for my first income property being this like phenomenal property. It was literally right next to a park. And so there was like a side area next to the HOA and it was amazing. Then I was like, you know what? I'm going to get even smarter. I'm going to finance this as a second home. And then later on, I'll just decide that I want to turn it into a rental, right? So I saved like another half point on the interest rates. And back then we're talking like 6%. So I got it maybe for like 5.5. And so again, I'm patting myself on the back. I'm like, yeah. First internet. How hard is this real estate stuff? Yeah, I had to go through 12 times, right? But I got a good one. So I lock up this property, we close. And, you know, I'm like, oh, this is cool, right? I go over there, you know, get the keys, whatever, all that good stuff. And then I'm like, all right, well, let me just sit on this for like a month or something. And then we're going to convert this to the rental, right? So I start to go look. I look on Craigslist and other places. I see people, you know, renting in the neighborhood. And so I'm like, all right, well, I already knew what they were renting it for. I started looking for property managers. So I went out, interviewed like 10 different ones, right? I found one and I'm like, all right, let's do this. And so he's like, all right. So we put a listing out there, and within, you know, I think they put it on like Craigslist and like, you know, a bunch of other sites, like, you know, 12 different sites. This is before the days, you know, bigger, larger sites, but, you know, they put on MLS, whoever else. And what happened was we got a letter from the HOA within a week saying, hey, you cannot rent your property. And I'm like, what do you mean you can't rent the property? It's my property. Of course I can rent the property. And they're like, read HOA exclusion, you know, 85.6. And so I'm like looking through the thing, and I had to dig it up, right? And I'm like looking at this thing, and it's like, you know, you shall not rent to anyone unless it's your direct mother or child.
Oh, man.
All other rentals are completely excluded in this community for the period of 99 years from the point of which it was like,
oh,
10, 15.
So I guess this is when you started adding that to your list of due diligence questions.
Wow.
It floored me. And here's the irony of it all. Usually I'm pretty good with the details, but I got so excited in the moment of just closing, right? After 12 different times, right? And I was like, I'm going to wrap this thing up. I had missed, you know, this fine print, right? And I had overlooked it because I had seen other people out there putting listings out, not realizing that they were getting letters, you know, once they listed it out there and getting shut down as well. And so I was like, well, there's got to be a way around this, right? So I contacted like three different real estate attorneys. I'm like, can they do this? Like, this is my property, this and that. And in the end, you know, what would happen? Yeah, I could have done it. And then they would have essentially started fining me upwards of $200 a day. And then, you know, eventually if there's, you know, a big enough fine, then they're going to put a lien in your property. And then I would lose it through that way, right? So essentially, my first income property, guys, had no income. so much for patting myself on the back.
My goodness.
My first income property had no income. So I will tell you this, guys. The silver lining to the story, even though it was pretty devastating at the time, was that I had ultimately looked at the worst possible case scenario. Never thinking that it was possible, but I did consider, okay, what's the worst possible thing that could happen? Okay, let's just say I can't rent it out. Well, then it becomes a second home. And it did become a second home, except we had no furniture in there. So I literally just sat there with no furniture, me getting HOA notifications like every 3 months about the lawn getting like, you know, too dirty. I didn't have to like send people over. And it just became this like, you know, cash sink. Now, the good thing about all this was that I did buy it at the right time, right? I bought this at 2010, right after the crash, right? So the timing was right. And because of that, you know, it eventually the market came back and I was able to sell it, you know, a couple of years later, get all my money back, right? But it was a complete, like, you know, break even at that point. And I just was like, woo, right? But what I will tell you, in that 2 year period, right, from 2010 to 2012, I could have just sat there and said, dude, real estate sucks. I went through all this hard work, I went through all these different steps, and it still didn't work out. Real estate sucks. It's never going to work. People, you know, they're talking about, you know, making money with real estate, whatever, right? That's a perspective, right? Mm-hmm. But the other perspective is like, well, what else can this mean, right? Well, what else this could mean was that, hey, I already done all the hard work. I had already figured out like the neighborhood. I already figured out everything. I, of course, missed the small little detail that affected everything. But guess what? There's houses across the street. So I literally went across the street, and we're talking within like 6 months of this other one happening. And I bought the house across the street. And I think I ended up buying that thing for maybe like 120 grand or something, a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, whatever it was. And I still hold this to this day. And it's been one of the best investments, right? I mean, I bought it at the right time and the cash flow has been consistent, and, you know, the returns.
So that one was not in the HOA.
That was not in that HOA. That was a different HOA, but it literally was across the street. And again, I tell you guys this story because it's a good, I think, example of things that happen in life, right? That we don't expect. We can do all the hard work. We can do everything that we need to do and still get it wrong. And here's the thing that I want you to kind of pay attention to. sometimes it's just that last 2 millimeter push, right? To get to those rewards, right? So many people give up, right? At that point where like it looks the bleakest, right? Where it looks like things are just, forget it. I did everything I could. But you want to ask yourself, what's that one extra push that you can do? And I think when you put yourself into that space, when you live life looking for opportunities, looking for what else can this mean? I feel like life opens up for you. And again, this is just one example. And this has happened, you know, multiple times in my life where I couldn't have ever anticipated things that happened once I took a different perspective, once I asked a better question and I didn't resolve to just, you know, basically taking the result that was handed to me or, you know, what I thought was an end result.
Michael, that story is just so powerful. I don't recall you telling me about that first property. So you see why?
I got too many stories.
I'm going to hear more of them. Oh, man, this is, Michael, that's just so powerful sharing that story just because I think some people, when they look at the investing journey or wanting to be rich or wealthy, you know, all they see is this end game, you know, with the cars and the nice house, vacations or whatever. But sometimes you go through through your journey, you go through those seasons where it can be challenging and you have to kind of break through that point in order to get to the next point. And I remember when I first started investing, I had like, you know, friends and family, you know, who maybe they didn't have a good experience you know those stories too, right? Like, don't get into, you know, the rental properties, you know, it's a headache. You're going to be fixing toilets at night. You're going to have to evict tenants. And, you know, you hear all these stories that they have and it's like, you know, it kind of, you know, when you hear those things, it can make you want to give up. You know, and so I think, you know, surrounding yourself with the right people is so important. Michael, would you agree with that? Do you feel like that was a big part of your journey, surrounding yourself with the right people and listening to the right voices?
It's a game changer, right? And as you mentioned, I run the Wealth Builders Mastermind with Dustin. And the reason why we created this in the first place is because we have our own private mastermind that has served us so well over the time. I was in business masterminds when I was growing my business that I attribute to allowing us to grow to the level that we did. And what it is, what it allows you to do, and I think you guys know this as well as investors, right? When you put yourself into proximity of other people that have standards that are higher than your own, you will naturally gravitate to those standards. And what I love about that, the best thing about this is that you don't have to push yourself to your goals. If you know your outcome that you already want, but you put yourself into proximity with people that already have that or are on the way to doing that, then you're naturally pulled just by being in proximity to them. And I feel that you get pulled to your goals rather than having to push yourself to your goals. Now, you can absolutely push yourself to your goals. And I think there's a time and place to do that during your investing journey. If you're an entrepreneur or even as an employee, right? There's times where you have to push yourself, but there's also times when you can get very strategic and you can put yourself in the proximity of the right people at the right time, at the right place, and learn from them, absorb everything you can. And if you can't afford maybe a direct mastermind, like a paid one, then you can create your own, right? And maybe you don't grow as fast, but you still grow. The other thing too, of course, is you can have many different mentors through books, through audio tapes, through listening to Breakthrough Investor, right? You can connect with other people and shorten the time that it takes to really, I think, hone in some of those lessons that, you know, we get from life. I mean, to be frank, the reason why I've found financial independence so early in my life is not because I'm so brilliant, right? It's because I got lucky to a certain extent, right? I had uncles that had done it and it gave me the belief that it's possible, right? So I'm already standing on the shoulders of other people, right? And that's because I was in proximity. Now, we don't get to ultimately decide, right, who we're born, you know, our families into or whatever. And of course, I've been very blessed and I accept that blessing. And at the same time, there does become a point in life where you then become conscious of your surroundings. And then it becomes a conscious choice of like, okay, who's going to be my chosen family? Who's going to be my chosen peer group of how I want to live my life? And when you finally realize that, right, then you get the ability to make a conscious decision to inject yourself into those situations, to learn different things from different people, to, you know, figure out what you value and then put yourself in the direct path to ideally put yourself in a statistical, you know, put yourself in the best odds to perform in that manner.
That's awesome, Michael. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that, man. It's always amazing to hear your wisdom, man. But this has been awesome, man. I wish we can do this for like all day long just listening to stories because you didn't even tell me that part of the story and all these other stories. So I'm just super blessed to have you as a friend and to know you, and I'm sure William is too. Yeah. So this has been amazing, Michael, but more than likely, maybe we missed something. Is there anything we missed so our audience can become a breakthrough investor just like you?
Yeah, we're going to have to extend this 3 hours, but no, just kidding.
William, all of the other recordings after this?
No, you know what? And I'd be happy to come back as you guys continue to reach the charts. But what I'd love to leave with you guys, right, on the journey is a lot of times, you're going to see people that are far ahead of you, right? And you're going to get excited by all the cool things that they're doing. And that's fantastic. That's great. It's great to be inspired. And at the same time, realize that there's a journey ahead that requires excitement, right? And that's, you're getting that from getting inspired by other people. And it also requires that grit, right? And part of that grit comes from just making sure that you keep an open mind and understanding that, hey, whatever life throws at you, there's almost always 20 different solutions to the problem. And it's likely that if there's someone in your proximity that you value has already solved that problem, simply go to them and ask how you can navigate that. And It's going to give you shortcuts beyond measure. And so it's so much easier in life when you get to do things as a team, whether it's you building a team of mentors just through books and podcasts, and then also building teams in terms of, you know, people in proximity, people online, or even people that you're literally standing next to, right? Whatever it is, make sure that you build a team that is aligned with your values, that's aligned with your goals. And remember that, again, God's delays are not necessarily his denials. And it's up to you to become that breakthrough investor by keeping strong, by keeping faith, and ultimately being true to yourself.
Amen. Thank you for sharing that, brother. Man, this has been absolutely amazing, fantastic, marvelous, everything. Michael, people are going to want to listen to you more online. How can they find you and how can they connect with you?
Absolutely. Well, as you mentioned, we've got the Breakthrough Millionaire podcast that I do with my co-host, Marlon Smith, which is an amazing motivational speaker and dear friend.
Love Marlon.
That's amazing. And someday I'll have to tell you the story of that one. That was a doozy as well. And then, of course, come to RubeCon, right? RubeCon, Real Estate Wealth Builders Conference that Dustin has created. And Charles and William are a big part of this as well. You know, Dustin's created this incredible investor community, right? And come visit us at the Wealth Builders Mastermind booth if you want to, you know, take a shortcut and you got some free cash that you want to invest in yourself. I think, again, this is one of the best ways to take shortcuts, right, is to get into masterminds and really just level up as quickly as you can. So those are the best places you can find me. Also, my blog, financiallyalert.com. And yeah, hope to see you and connect with you soon.
Awesome. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Michael. Again, it's been great having you on the show, and see you at RubeCon next year or before. We need to find another excuse.
Indeed. Hopefully before.
All right, buddy. You take care.
Take care, guys.